It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. Here we go. We got two more games on Sunday after what Evan wrote on Twitter, and I did as well, was the best weekend in football, the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. Now we got the best day in football. Not the best weekend, but the best day. Conference Championship Sunday. This is the Fantasy Feast Podcast presented by BetOnline.ag, the online gaming website of choice for the Fantasy Feast Podcast, with the best odds, the fastest payouts. He, of course, is the man, the myth, the legend, Evan Silva from RotoWorld. I know a lot of you already check out all his stuff over at RotoWorld and on Twitter, at Evan Silva. Even his retweets are good. You're a good retweeter, Evan. I am a former offensive lineman in the NFL for 7 years, five teams. Now I got a bunch of different media gigs and podcasts like the Ross Tucker Football Podcast and Even Money and the College Draft and all kinds of cool things that you guys can check out over at RossTucker.com. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter and Instagram, and it's Facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL for those of you that are just Facebook-only dudes, which I totally understand. That's cool. All right, Evan. So when we get to this point where there's only two games, what are we doing strategy-wise? What's the key here when we're playing at DraftKings?
Definitely want to try to find some cheap guys who have a chance to really exceed the value that is implied by their salary. So last week, you know, we talked a lot about Danny Amendola and James White, and both of those guys crushed it. We specifically talked mostly about Danny Amendola, but he totally crushed it. We need to find guys like that again this week. I don't think that Danny Amendola is going to be the answer this week, but as we go through the games, I'm going to try to, you know, just try to like shine a spotlight on guys who maybe could be this week's Danny Amendola or TJ Yeldon. I'm giving away one. Danny Amendola or James White.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. I feel like theoretically, some of these Jags receivers, like my boy Keelan Cole, might fit that criteria.
Yeah. So let's just start with the Jaguars offense, just using that as like our jump off point. So, one of the big things for the Jaguars the last few weeks in particular offensively to keep their chains moving has been the running ability of Blake Bortles. The Patriots historically, when they face dual threat quarterbacks, they will try to keep them confined to the pocket and make them make throws, which really is a sound a logical strategy to approach Blake Bortles. You know, a lot of his carries, they're not necessarily, you know, design carries. They're just the defense will be in man coverage. They're downfield covering receivers, and Blake Bortles will see their opportunistic scrambles as opposed to designed runs. So if the Patriots play more zone, and the Patriots played a lot of man over the course of the season, I think they actually had one of the highest man coverage rates in the NFL this year. If they play more zone, that would be one way for them to deal with Blake Bortles rushing. The Patriots, they over the course of the season have forced their opponents to throw. NFL teams facing the Patriots had the third most pass attempts per game in the NFL at almost 37. Marcus Mariota last week had 37 attempts against them as well. I think that, you know, the Jaguars will have, their game plan each week really is to try to manage Blake Bortles, put him in high percentage scenarios. You know, last week it was a lot of, especially early in the game, it was a lot of high percentage, like tight end screens to Ben Koyak and James O'Shaughnessy. Those plays worked, and they are going to try to keep him from being the reason that the team loses. The Patriots were fairly susceptible, though, to running quarterbacks. So, I mean, we'll see how they play. You know, they could play man. They could play a lot of zone. Usually against man, it is better news for running quarterbacks because the defensive backs turn their backs to the offense. But, I mean, we saw Cam Newton go 8 for 44 and 1 rushing against him. Deshaun Watson had 8 for 41 against him. Mariota last week, even though he strained his quad early in the game, finished with 4 carries for 37 yards against them. Blake Bortles ultimately is going to be, I mean, we only have, what, 4 quarterbacks that are playable on this slate. He's going to be kind of contrarian, but he's interesting because this game has high scoring potential. Hey, if he rushes for a touchdown, he's in a great, great spot. And he brings that ability to the table. You mentioned the wideout. So the one issue with Keelan Cole, and he did bring down a 45-yard bomb, which was the Jaguars' biggest pass play of the game last week. The issue with him is that his playing time has started to dip. He played only 36% of the snaps last week. Allen Hurns was down to 30%. You know, they're using 4 receivers. D.D. Westbrook led the team, or led the receivers in snaps, 69%. Marquise Lee led the receivers in targets with 6. He was second in playing time with 64%. He probably would have been a little bit higher if he had not aggravated that foot injury early in the game. He did come back in, didn't really do much the rest of the way. But in the wild card round, all the receivers were like all bunched together in terms of their playing time. And Keelan Cole and Allen Hurns in the last game started to like fall back a little bit while Marquise Lee and D.D. Westbrook were out in front. So, look, man, I mean, there just aren't many wide receivers on the slate, period, because there are only 4 games. That keeps Keelan Cole in play. However, I think that the better probability bets are going to be on D.D. Westbrook and Marquise Lee just because they're playing more. At this point, as for their matchups, I mean, not great matchups. I think that we will see Malcolm Butler against D.D. Westbrook just because it makes a little more sense from a size standpoint. D.D. Westbrook, 178 pounds. Marquise Lee is a little bit bigger, and Stephon Gilmore is one of the taller corners in the league, 6'1". We saw Malcolm Butler last week get beat by Corey Davis for a couple of touchdowns. One of them, of course, was in garbage time. One of them was for the first score of the game. Malcolm Butler has been kind of up and down, I would say. I mean, he'll give up plays. You know, he's definitely not a bad player. He's a very good player. But, you know, not every good cornerback is necessarily a shutdown cornerback. And so I think that D.D. Westbrook is going to have opportunities to make plays in this game. I think he's going to be on the field a lot, and I think he's going to have the best opportunities of the Jaguars' wide receivers, and I think that Marquise Lee would be second on my list. None of these guys produced last week outside of that bomb to Keelan Cole, but that was the only ball that Keelan Cole caught all game, and so, you know, definitely not a lot of reliability with any of these guys. At tight end, it's really like a 3, if you're just looking at it from a fantasy standpoint. Mercedes Lewis obviously plays the most because he blocks a ton. But if you're just looking at it from a fantasy standpoint and you're just trying to figure out who might catch passes, it's like a 3-way rotation. Last 2 weeks, Mercedes Lewis ran 16 and 11 routes. That's really low, by the way, for a starting tight end. He's a blocking tight end. Ben Koyak ran 4 and 6 routes. James O'Shaughnessy ran 12 and 8 routes. So you could try to get lucky and hope that one of these guys scores a touchdown, but I think that we are looking for just guys that are going to be running more routes than, you know, we're looking at the rest of the slate for tight end plays. At the running back position, Leonard Fournette, you know, he looked great in the first, like, 17 minutes of last game. There had been concerns that his effectiveness was down, and his effectiveness was down in the second half of the year. But those concerns were, some of them stemmed from injuries. I would lean away from saying that they were due to injuries, because he's looked good when whenever he's gotten the ball in space, whenever he's had an opportunity to get a full head of steam, whether it be in week 17 when they were feeding him passes against the Titans and he was ripping big games, or in in the divisional round against the Steelers when he just had some room. I mean, the Jaguars won the battle in the trenches, and especially in those first 17 minutes. And then he pulls up lame with that ankle injury. He was in a ton of pain. He did end up coming back into the game. Wasn't as effective after he returned. You know, you wonder how much soreness is he going to have this week? How much, you know, is he going to be affected at all by that? The people in the medical community, that are like on football Twitter that are very, very good, they really don't anticipate any problems with him. I'll be interested to see how much he practices. This may be one of the weeks where he just doesn't practice. He had a couple of those during the season, but I would say that we'd have a little bit more confidence in him if he does practice. You know, the Patriots were giving in terms of rushing efficiency all season. However, in their last three games, they've really buckled down, and that's even without Alan Branch, who may be back this week, their big 350-pound nose tackle. But in their last three games, Patriots have held running backs to 2.7 yards per carry, zero rushing touchdowns. And I think my guess is that they will try to make the Jaguars play left-handed, kind of do what they did last week against Derrick Henry and try to clog up everything around the line of scrimmage. They know they're very well aware of the Jaguars' offensive identity. And I think that just making sure that Leonard Fournette is not getting easy lanes like he had last week against the Steelers should be a priority for the Patriots. Now, I think TJ Yeldon becomes interesting here because he does have a role. It's sort of dependent upon the extent of that role is sort of dependent upon Leonard Fournette's health and also the flow of the game. Because if the Jaguars fall behind in this game, TJ Yeldon is likelier to play more snaps because he plays in a lot of longer down and distance and obvious passing situations. Leonard Fournette has actually played in more of those in recent games than he did earlier in the season. But ultimately, that's TJ Yeldon's role. So if we can get like 7 to 10 touches from TJ Yeldon at a very affordable cost in daily fantasy, he could end up being one of the better plays on the slate. Now, if you just look back at his divisional round box score, you know, you have to understand that his touchdown kind of came in a breather moment for Leonard Fournette. I think Leonard Fournette had just ripped a couple of big plays. Leonard Fournette already had two touchdowns under his belt at this time. The Jaguars got into scoring position. They gave TJ Yeldon two straight carries. He scored on the second one. His usage was also slightly increased by the fact that Leonard Fournette essentially missed the entire second quarter, and therefore TJ Yeldon got on the field a little bit more. The matchup is really good for TJ Yeldon. The Patriots allowed the third most receiving yards per game to running backs this year. And so I think that TJ Yeldon is kind of a sleeper on this slate. That takes care of the Jaguars offense. Do you have any thoughts? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple things. Number one, it was interesting. I was talking with Greg Cosell for the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and he mentioned, you know, he would envision potentially the Patriots having playing a lot of man against the Jags and trying to make Bortles throw the ball into tight windows and having somebody spy Bortles. As a possibility. It doesn't mean they'll do it, but he mentioned that clearly same thing, you know, worried about Bortles' ability to run, that being a major factor, and trying to figure out, you know, what the Patriots would do to stop it. He thought kind of a mush rush and man coverage, try to take away the easy early throws. And also talking with the Jags coaches before the game, I got the sense that as time goes, you'll start to see more O'Shaughnessy and less Koyak as sort of that second tight end, or in a lot of those second tight end packages. O'Shaughnessy can really run. You know, he's on special teams. I called his game in the FCS championship. So I would just say, if you're going to take a flyer on one of those guys, do O'Shaughnessy, because it sounds like the coach just want to give him a little more of the two tight end sets, and also he can run better than Koyak.
I dig it. I remember he played at Illinois State, I believe Illinois State, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Matt Waldman, who we've had on the show, great draft mind. He was a big fan of O'Shaughnessy. I had never even heard of him, before I read some stuff that Matt Waldman had written about him. I think he ran like sub 4.6 coming out of Illinois State. I think he ran like 4.59. He's definitely a very good athlete, and he's been running more routes than Ben Koyak lately. And so it sounds like the arrow is going to maybe even point up further for that. So he's definitely in play as a sleeper on the conference championship round slate. You have any thoughts on the Patriots offense here? And maybe after talking to Cosell, or.
Not really, no. I mean, it does seem like they like to throw more often than you think in these playoff games. I just wonder if they'll look at the Jags and think that their best tactic in this game, you know, a lot of times they like to throw, but I don't know. I wonder if they'll look at the Jags and think their best tactic is to try to run right at them.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of conundrum and thing to sort out. I mean, we know what the Patriots are going to try to do, and that is to try. They're going to look at the Jaguars and think, what are their weaknesses? Because that's what they do every week. And then they are going to try to attack those weaknesses. And I think that running at them is definitely in play. The Jaguars' run defense did get better after they acquired Marcell Dareus. It was not there were some moments later in the season, especially in the final month of the season, where they were a little more giving to opposing RBs. Where I've kind of noticed that they have shown some vulnerability is to running backs in the passing game. You go back in week 15, Kyle Juszczyk, 5 catches for 76 yards. Against him in that game that they lost, shootout game that they lost to the 49ers. Juszczyk was like making plays downfield in that game. In week 16, Derrick Henry had a 66-yard screen pass touchdown against the Jags. In week 17, the Bills running backs had Bills running backs had 7 catches for 56 yards against them. And then last week, of course, Le'Veon Bell, 9 for 88. And a touchdown on 13 targets against the Jaguars. So, you know, we saw a lot of running back targets last week from the Patriots attacking over and over and over again those weaknesses for the Titans. The Jaguars are kind of built to handle this a little bit better. They have a very athletic linebacker, particularly in Telvin Smith. They have good safeties. But I think that they may see this game and, you know, funnel another 8 to 12 targets to their running backs. Last week they had 17 running back targets to Deion Lewis and James White. They're getting back Rex Burkhead. I am kind of sort of not really predicting, but I'm interested to see, will they come out playing some two back formations and try to get Deion Lewis and James White, you know, where they line up with one guy on one side of the shotgun next to Brady and the other guy on the other side, you know, just not really throwing at Jalen Ramsey and trying to get those running backs maybe matched on like Paul Posluszny, as opposed to, you know, pushing their targets to the best at the best players in the Jaguars defense. And, you know, Burkhead can be very key to this. And Ian Rappaport reported that he's going to be back this week. He was very close to returning last week. They have three backs that they can use in the passing game. And I think that they are going to, I think that we are going to see another game with a decent number of running back targets. And I think that that makes, I mean, with Burkhead coming back, it makes James White much less of the sleeper this week that he was last week. And it puts Rex Burkhead in play. I think that Deion Lewis is going to remain the feature back. I think that he's just earned that at this point. I mean, he's been the most consistently explosive player in the Patriots offense over their last three games. As for Tom Brady, you know, I think that, all right, well, let's talk about the passing game a little bit more, just the pass catchers, because I went back and I looked at the wide receivers who have had success against the Jaguars this season and trying to draw like any similarities to players in the Patriots pass catcher core. And I mean, it stands out immediately that the receivers that have really given the Jaguars problems are speed guys or just deep threats. Antonio Brown actually isn't even technically a speed guy, but he's absolutely a deep threat. And he, of course, had a monster game playing even significantly. I didn't think he looked as explosive as usual.
No, definitely not.
Definitely not.
He's the best, Evan, at making contested catches for a 5'10", 181-pound guy I've ever seen in my life. It's just he makes the contested catch seemingly every time. And the guy's 5'10", the buck 80. Have you ever seen him in person? Like, you'd be amazed. He's it's just crazy. It really is.
He is an alien. I mean, either way.
You know who's an alien? You know who's an alien? Martavis Bryant. Did you see? So, first of all, that 4th-and-11 deep post he caught was amazing, his acceleration. And then really late in the game, when it was like 45-35 and the game was over, they threw like a slant to Martavis Bryant, and he almost took it to the house. I mean, he made the Jags defense look so slow as he ran across the field for the opposite pylon. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, he's going to be an interesting debate for 2018 fantasy, and we'll have many discussions about him for sure. But he's another deep threat that had, you know, a relatively big, like at least a big box score game against the Jags, 2 for 78 and a touchdown last week. Antonio Brown, of course, 7 for 132 and 2 touchdowns. Tyler Lockett, 4 for 90 and a touchdown against the Jags. Doug Baldwin is a slot receiver, but he also can beat you deep down field. 3 for 78 and a touchdown. T.Y. Hilton had 3 for 51 and a touchdown against him. Paul Richardson, 3 for 72 and a touchdown against the Jags. It makes me think that this could be a sneaky, like, sort of bounce back spot for Brandon Cooks, who had a quiet game last week. You know, Adoree Jackson was on him almost most of the game. Adoree Jackson, by the end of the season, was a guy that you did not want to attack, and that will be notable for 2018. But he won most of his battles late in the year, including against Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks finished second in the league behind Tyreek Hill in yards on throws attempted 20-plus yards downfield. So we know where the Patriots are going to use him. Before last week, when he was obviously quiet, he had 80-plus yards and or a touchdown in five of his previous 8 games. I just think that this is a game where we could see Brandon Cooks get deep downfield and make a big play, and people are not going to want to use him in daily fantasy. But I think that he has a chance to run behind the Jaguars' defense. Again, the Jaguars have been most giving. The Jaguars are just good. I know they gave up a lot of points in a crazy game last week, but they have like a legitimately good defense. You know, it was all year, it was a top 2 defense right there with Minnesota. So I'm not like down on it because Antonio Brown made 2 ridiculous plays and, you know, they hit that bomb like right before the half to Martavis. And they racked up a lot of points and yards like late in the game when, it was just a super back and forth game. I'm not like down on the Jaguars defense. Chris Hogan, we talked a lot last week about how he was used so heavily in scoring position. And last week he comes back with a 4-yard touchdown, didn't do anything otherwise, did have some great blocks to spring teammates open. But he had a lot of deep downfield targets. He runs 57% of his routes in the slot. But when he's on the outside, he's usually running downfield and hit 11 targets of 20-plus yards, which despite the fact that he missed 7 games, that was 3rd on the team behind Rob Gronkowski and Brandon Cooks. Last week, Chris Hogan came back. He was a full-time player. He ran 48 routes, only 4 fewer routes than Brandon Cooks, and he ran 7 more routes than Danny Amendola. So I think that he's very much in play. He seems like a guy who's probably not going to get open against Bouye and Ramsey. So that would be a significant concern. But we know that Brady looks for him in scoring position, which helps his touchdown chances. And we know that the Jags have had problems at times giving up bigger pass plays, and we know that Chris Hogan will run those routes. You know, obviously I like Brandon Cooks better, but, I mean, Chris Hogan does make some sense. Danny Amendola was huge on him last week. I'm totally going away from him this week. It does seem like every year in the playoffs, you know, they kind of save him in the regular season, and he comes out and has a bigger role. In the playoffs, it's just no slot receivers had success against the Jags all season long. I mean, we would talk at times about how, hey, you know, maybe there's a chance that, you know, Keenan Allen can have a good game this week. He's going to get routes against Aaron Colvin. He's not going to get as many routes against Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye. Just didn't work out that way. Juju last week, Juju Smith-Schuster, he was quiet. I mean, didn't see much of him. He scored a touchdown. It was in what amounted to garbage time last week. And I don't want to test that slot coverage with Danny Amendola. One thing that Warren Sharp also noted, and I was talking to him about this week, is that the Jags, their defense was at its best against 11 personnel, which is 3 receiver sets. And then they were shockingly exploitable by formations other than that. And that makes me wonder, are we going to see not necessarily more 2 tight end sets, but more 2 back formations, maybe with Devlin, but definitely with Deion Lewis and James White and Rex Burkhead next to Brady, and then that would take Amendola off the field. They would be in more two receiver formations, and that would be Chris Hogan and Brandon Cooks in those formations, and then Amendola would come off the field. So I'm fading Danny Amendola this week. Rob Gronkowski, he had 15 targets of 20 plus yards or more this season. He is easily the top pass catcher play. The Jaguars actually were great against tight ends all season, allowed the 5th fewest yards to the position. They shut down Jimmy Graham, Delanie Walker, Charles Clay, Jack Doyle all late in the season. They did give up a bunch of production last week to Vance McDonald, But the way that that production was kind of manufactured, we don't see Gronk used like that. Like, Vance McDonald was catching little tight end screens and little shovel passes, and I'm not sure that we're going to see Gronk used in that manner. I think that he'll be running more downfield routes, and I think that he just wins because of his size. It really doesn't matter how good against tight ends your defense is when you're facing Rob Gronkowski. He's just a different animal. That pretty much takes care of that game as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and remember, the place to play this weekend is DraftKings. I know a lot of people think fantasy football is over, but if you listen to this podcast, you know it is not. DraftKings, I was even watching this video. They have awesome, awesome new games that you can play just in the playoffs. Very, very cool. Public contests with huge cash prizes. Private contests where you're going against your friends. They got beginner, casual contests. They got new things that focus just on one game, both games. It's really, really cool. They got all kinds of new games. If you haven't gone to DraftKings in a while to see what your options are for playing, fantasy football in the playoffs, you need to check out some of the new things they've got going, because it's pretty darn cool. And remember, when you do that, just use the code FEAST at DraftKings.com to play free with your deposit for your share of hundreds of thousands of dollars in total prizes this Sunday. But hurry, because Sunday will be here before you know it. So get to DraftKings.com now to choose your lineup, and you can play for serious cash on Sunday. That's code FEAST, baby. Only at DraftKings.com. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. NFC Championship game, Evan, is the second game. I will be there on the sideline for Westwood One. Really looking forward to it. I was in Philly last week on the sideline. Should be a heck of a game. I really think, in terms of the contest, it's going to be a toss-up. I also really think, Evan, that this seems destined to be a pretty low-scoring game.
Yeah, the total is real low. I mean, 38. Total is actually, Warren Sharp noticed this, that totals that are set by sportsbooks, we used to see the games that would have totals of like 34, 36. In recent years, those have gone away. Sportsbooks are not setting totals that low anymore, but this one is set like one of the lowest of the year, 38 points. There are not like a lot of offensive edges on either side, and that's borne out in the fact that it's supposed to be such a low-scoring game. Beginning with the Vikings side, the Eagles have held 10 of the last 11 quarterbacks to face them below 230 passing yards. They have been generating. Actually, the only guy in that space that did go over 230 was friggin' Eli Manning in Week 15. The game that still like bothers me every time I look at the Eagles' defense. I'm like, what in the heck happened in that game? But they're a very good defense, and they generate immense pressure. They led the NFL in quarterback hits per game at 7.2. They take off the first round bye. They come out fresh. They hang 11 hits and 3 sacks on Matt Ryan last week. And Matt Ryan still was able to make some. I mean, Matt Ryan was very good in that game, did his job, played well enough to win. He made some plays under pressure last week, but the pressure that they were able to bring with Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox in particular, it was pretty close to overwhelming. And that's concerning, especially after Case Keenum had like a 5 passer rating against pressure last week. Case Keenum, though, was good. His against pressure stats over the course of the season were pretty good. But he's going to have to make plays from muddy pockets in this game, and that's difficult. The one advantage that I think that stands out for the Vikings is that, so last week in Week 17, Adam Thielen ran 65% of his routes in the slot. Last week, they came out, Thielen was an outside receiver last week. He ran almost 80% of his routes outside. It actually allowed the Saints to, like, tie him up a lot frequently with Marshawn Lattimore, and Thielen was able to still make some plays, but it made it easier for the Saints to stick Lattimore on him, because Lattimore typically would not run inside and chase a guy into the slot, and I thought that that could be an advantage for Thielen because he had played so many slot snaps the week prior, and he was getting a ton of targets in the slot, but they used him as an outside receiver last week. The reason that this all happened was because the Vikings made a commitment to Jarius Wright as their third receiver, as opposed to like rotating him with Laquon Treadwell and Michael Floyd, which they had done in previous games. Jarius Wright ran 29 routes. He played almost half of the snaps. Those were like season highs for him. The routes were a season high. The six targets were a season high. He is a sleeper on this slate, especially against an Eagles defense that gave up some production to slot receivers later in the year. Sterling Shepard burned them bad in that game against the Giants. Cooper Kupp had a big game against him. Doug Baldwin had a big game against him. I mean, if we get 30 routes and six targets out of Jarius Wright, you know, at or around the minimum price, and no one's going to want to play him, we can be at an advantage against our opponents. But I think that the biggest edge here is if they continue that, we're going to get Thielen and Diggs on the outside against Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby, and I think that those guys are vulnerable, especially Jalen Mills. I think that the optimal approach here is for the Vikings to do what they did last week and try to get their best receivers lined up against Jalen Mills as often as possible. As for the rest of the Vikings offense, I mean, I would say that maybe there is some optimism for Jerick McKinnon. We saw how Tevin Coleman was able to exploit the Eagles defense a little bit on the edges last week. Devontae Freeman got nothing going. Devontae Freeman was playing through a couple of knee sprains too, and you could tell that he just wasn't – like he was unable to keep his footing at times. He just wasn't 100%. But, I mean, he also didn't really have a chance on a lot of those runs because the Eagles defensive line was in the backfield. But I think that, you know, using that Tevin Coleman template, that could bode positively for Jerick McKinnon. I just think it's going to be really tough for Latavius Murray. The Eagles were great against tight ends all year, so that's concerning for Kyle Rudolph, you know. But I think that that is the most – those are probably the most exploitable matchups for the Vikings, using the Tevin Coleman template for Jerick McKinnon and trying to get those receivers lined up as often as possible against Jalen Mills.
Yeah, and one thing I want to chime in there is one thing I thought was noteworthy from the Vikings-Saints game was the Saints got more pressure on Keenum than the Vikings got on Breeze. Now, some of that is because Breeze gets rid of the ball so quickly, but that game was in Minnesota. So, I don't know. I look at it and I think, well, first of all, the Eagles have a better pass rush than the Saints do because they got more dudes. And second of all, the Vikings will be on the road. So at home, they're at least supposed to have the snap count advantage, which should help them in that situation. Whereas now they're going to be on the road and not have the snap count advantage. It's going to be loud. And they got some bad matchups. You know, Rashad Hill did not play well at right tackle. Remmers, you know, they tried to put him in at left guard rather than Jeremiah Surlis. I mean, no matter who they put at left guard, Fletcher Cox is probably going to kill that dude. And then Rashad Hill at right tackle, you know, whether it's Brandon Graham or Vinnie Curry or whoever, he better play a lot better than he did at home. And now he's going to be doing it on the road where it's loud and the Eagles' D-line comes at you in waves. I thought that was noteworthy in terms of a passing attack for Keenum and the Vikings on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's going to be under pressure. I mean, I think there's no two ways about it. On the other side, I wanted to note that I had like some conversations with someone who's like really, really good with medical stuff. And he, after watching Nick Foles in the divisional round, had like concerns about the health of Nick Foles' arm. And Nick Foles, I went back in the Roto-World database because we blurb like every little injury. And as far back as November of 2016, Nick Foles was starting to have like arm problems. He showed up on the injury report as like limited with an elbow injury. And then he considered retiring at one point. And then during training camp, he missed like almost all of training camp due to an arm injury. And then, you know, they wanted to get Nate Sudfeld reps late in the – or in that Week 17 game. And they wanted to get him like kind of a lot of reps when Nick Foles really like technically could have used those reps. Now, Nick Foles played well enough to win last week, but there were some throws that this – particular individual noticed that he was like, wow, that was a very errant throw. And he wondered if there was an issue with Nick Foles' UCL, which is I'm not a doctor, you know, I really probably shouldn't even be talking about this, but I think that that's what gets repaired in like Tommy John surgery for baseball pitchers or something like that. So I just wanted to note that. It doesn't necessarily, you know, Nick Foles can have a good game. He had a good game against the Giants. He threw four touchdowns. He played well enough to win last week against the Falcons. But there were just some throws last week that really stood out to this, you know, very smart individual that made him come away from it thinking that maybe there's an issue with Nick Foles' arm. And there is, like, evidence to suggest that Nick Foles has had arm problems for an extended period of time. You know, we're going to get Xavier Rhodes for sure on Alshon. Mackenzie Alexander, it was funny, Bucky Brooks of NFL.com tweeted, number 20 is Waldo during the game last week. And that means, you know, you find Waldo because that's where we're going. If the Eagles can get some matchups with him on Aguilar or with Aguilar against Mackenzie Alexander, I think that that could be beneficial. I had higher expectations for Aguilar last week. It wasn't like a gimme matchup, but I thought it was a pretty favorable one. And he just really never got involved. That was a little surprising to me. They did give him the ball on some of those run plays, which helped. He wasn't a zero, but I think that this is a good spot for him to bounce back. I didn't look at his like ownership in daily fantasy, but I would guess that he was pretty high owned last week because he was just like a legitimately good play. But going back to him, I think does make some sense at tight end. So Andrew Sedejo, he got clocked on a. It was just a collision. I mean, I think that people thought it was dirty at first. I did not think it was dirty after I watched it like three or four times on a collision with Michael Thomas. And Sendejo like got knocked out. So you wonder, is he going to receive clearance for this game? We're recording this on Wednesday morning. And, you know, we probably won't know until like Friday or Saturday whether or not Andrew Sendejo is going to play. That could be significant for the outlook of Zach Ertz. Andrew Sendejo is a really, really good player. I remember, you know, when he was kind of coming up, I think that he was not viewed as having the potential to become the player that he has become. But he is, you know, one of the better safeties in the league and in tandem with Harrison Smith, one of the best safety duos in the league. So that's an injury to watch out for. In the backfield, Eagles got to just get the ball to Jay Ajayi more. I mean, he was gashing the Falcons last week. There was an extended stretch where he was on the bench. Some people were saying that maybe he got a concussion eval. It was just kind of – I mean, he's obviously their best option. And then at halftime, like the halftime reporters were saying that Doug Peterson told them specifically they needed to get the ball more to Jay Ajayi. And they did in the second half, and he came back and made more big plays. So I think that we're going to see, you know, I've said this a couple times this year, so, and it hasn't proven to be correct yet. So take it with a grain of salt. But I think that we're going to see more Jay Ajayi this week, because I think that that's the Eagles' optimal kind of approach.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think that they think that, you know, when they're running their traps and whams, that LeGarrette Blount is a better inside runner. Ajayi and Clement are more the outside guys. I also thought, I mean, Ajayi had an 8-yard run on Saturday that was like the best 8-yard run I've ever seen. Like, he popped in, out, in, yep, back in, and then he broke a tackle from Derek Shelby. He's pretty impressive. I think it's interesting, though, you know, the Eagles really managed Nick Foles last week, Evan, and they made sure that it was a lot of one-read stuff. It was a lot of RPOs. I mean, it felt like half of his completions were he put the ball in the belly of the running back and then threw that slant to either Aguilar or Alshon Jeffrey, because the Falcons play cover three, which is zone, or even if they play – even if they're playing man, they're not really like press man guys. I got to think that if you're Zimmer, he likes press man. He likes – I know Xavier Rhodes will play that way, and maybe, yep, Waynes as well. And they're going to – my guess is really try to take away those quick slants, the quick slants off the RPOs, make Foles throw the ball outside the numbers, and make him not be able to just throw it to his first read. I'd be surprised if Foles had as good of a game. And frankly – I think Xavier Rhodes will probably eat Alshon Jeffrey up, but I guess we'll see.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. So I guess just to wrap up, I think that the best two sleepers, based on the, you know, the cheap guys, based on the research that I've done so far, and I haven't researched the whole slate fully, and I will have by Thursday when I publish my matchups column. I mean, I'm like 60 or 70% of the way there. But I think that the best two cheap plays on this slate are going to be Jarius Wright and TJ Yeldon. Definitely like going back to Aguilar, like Jerick McKinnon. And then pretty much anyone is on the table in that Patriots-Jaguars game. That game opened at 46.5. And it has already been bet up. So that tells you, you know, that game can be – it has some high-scoring potential. I mean, I know that we don't really – it's not ingrained in our brains to think that the Jaguars are a high-scoring team. They've scored 30 or more in 5 of their last 7, and they've scored 24 or more in 6 of their last 8. And we know that the Patriots can score. And we know that, hey, the Jags, although we still respect the Jaguars' defense immensely, we do know that they just gave up 42 to the Steelers. So those are kind of all my bottom line thoughts on this two game slate. It's going to be difficult in DFS, but you know, I think that if you're able to uncover a gem or two, and again, I think that Yeldon and Jarius Wright stand out to me right now as two potential gems, you're going to be in a good situation against your competition.
Evan, you have outdone yourself again, my friend. There will be no better place where anyone can get fantasy football information, or frankly, just data and information at all, analysis at all, in the two conference championship games. That was amazing. Make sure you're retweeting the podcast. We really appreciate those of you guys that do that. At Ross Tucker NFL is me. He's at Evan Silva. Of course, if you want to make sure you know exactly when the podcast has been posted each and every Wednesday, it is at RTF Podcast, our trusty producer, Brian Neal. And of course, we're year-round, dudes. We're not messing around. We're going to have an awesome, awesome show for you next week. We haven't decided what we're going to do. Maybe a season recap, maybe a guest. We'll figure it out. And then the week after, it'll be all about the big one, the Super Bowl. Appreciate the iTunes rankings and comments always, just like we appreciate those of you that download us multiple times on multiple devices. Those are the people that are really rock stars. Just download on, make sure your phone, on your tablet, on your laptop, when you're watching TV or whatever. That is awesome. Other than that, totally stuffed from that two-game meal from Evan Silva here on the Fantasy Feast Eaten podcast. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
All right, Bri, I got some useful tips for your car that you might not be aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. And you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. Weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.